Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tzadihei Amud Aleph, 14 lines down. Amar Rav, Basar, Kevan Shinit Aleh Minayin Asur. If you have meat that's not under continuous watch or supervision, then it becomes Asur. In a minute, we'll discuss exactly what's behind this or the reasoning behind this. But the Brei Gemara is bringing it over here because of the situation that we just discussed with regards to Rabbi's position, which is Meitave. Rabbi Omer, Makolin, Vitabcha Yisrael. If you have the sellers, the meat stalls that are selling meat, but the majority or all the butchers in town are Jewish butchers, and therefore the meat that is being sold is definitely kosher meat. Basar shenimtza b'yadov de kochavim mutar. The basar that they're selling is totally fine because the meat that they have is okay. So the question is, why isn't that considered to be basar shenitalei minayin? It's not under constant Jewish supervision. It's not having anything that indicates that it's kosher meat. So how are we buying this meat from the stalls based on Rav's statement? Where it says, Nimsa biyad oved kochavim shiny. The fact that the oved kochavim is supervising and it's in his possession, that's enough to rid ourselves of the problem, basar shenitalei minayin. Which obviously then makes us wonder what exactly is the problem with basar shenitalei minayin. So look in Rashi, Nimsa biyad oved kochavim shiny, shaita b'cheskat mishtamer. It was supervised during that entire time. V'hu lo shachta. And it's clear that he didn't do the shechita. These are meat sellers, these are not butchers. U'trefa lo machrulo. And we know that none of the Jewish butchers sold a treif on that day. We're speaking about a place where there are machriz, if there is a treifa. And since there was no hachraza, then we know that there was no treifa put into the market on that day. So therefore, the basar that is under supervision or the watch of these Ovdei Kochavim is totally fine. Then what is the worry? Rashi says, a basar munach. If you have basar that's just laying out without any supervision, shema orvim chofua. Maybe ravens came along and swapped out the basar with other basar. They took the piece that you had and took it away and then replaced it with another piece of meat. And you can see a similar sentiment in the Balei HaTosafot, who says, Vafilu be'ir sheyesh barov tabchei Yisrael. Even in a city where the majority of the butchers are kosher meat, so then you would assume that even if a raven came and swapped out the meat, he was swapping it out for other kosher meat. The chashinan shema orvim, aitu nevela mi ruba de alma. We worry about the fact that the ravens can bring it from outside of the city. They have a certain distance that they can fly, and that distance exceeds the boundaries or the limits of this city. If that's the case, they could be bringing meat from outside the city or from places that are not kosher. And since the majority of the places around this area are not kosher, even though this city in particular is kosher, we have to worry about the fact that these ravens swapped it out. V'chumra v'almahu. And Tosfot recognizes that this is just a chumra. Mishum uvda d'havad g'lekaman. Because of an incident that we're going to see upcoming. So Tosfot agrees that this is nothing about inherent kashrut or supervision in terms of kashrut. This is simply a chashash for the fact that somebody might have swapped out the meat and that somebody is not an individual because over here the individuals can't get their hands on non-kosher meat. So it's the ravens or animals that we're worried about swapping out the meat, and the chashash is for meat that came from outside of this area where the robe is not kosher meat. Now, from both Rashi and Tosafot, it would seem clear that if the situation was not that they roped up Chei Yisrael, then Basar Nitalim and Ayim would be problematic, not just because of the birds or the animals, but it would also be problematic from the individuals that were there. Because if a non-Jew gets a hold of the meat, he could swap out this meat for other meat without you having any guarantee that the meat that he swapped out for was kosher meat, because he has the availability to bring in non-kosher meat. In that situation, we no longer have nemanut or reliability associated with the oved kochavim. And that's why in this case, it specifically surrounds the situation in which rov tabchei Yisrael. So that's the view of most Rishonim as to what the issue of basar nitalei minayin is. That at its core, it's a problem of animals or something switching it out. Sometimes it can be an oved kochavim that's swapping it out, depending on what's available to him or what he has that he could swap it out with. That's the view of most of the Rishonim. There is a view that's brought by the Baal HaMor based on the upcoming Gemara that the problem of Basar Shenitalei Minayin is not in situations where just simply you lost supervision of it or view of it, but the problem is how the meat is found, which is the fact that if it's found just laying out on the ground or thrown out somewhere, you have to be choshesh that it's a nevela, because people don't just leave meat around. Or they don't leave meat unsupervised. Given that you found this meat unsupervised and tossed out, that's an indication already, or circumstantial evidence that we're dealing with something that has a problem with it, or that might be a nevela. And that's the way the Baal HaMor attacks it, based on an upcoming Mishnah that we're going to bring. So The Gemara then asks from a very famous Gemara in Pesachim and a Ketubot, which is one of the main bases for Rov, which is Tashma. Teisha Chanayot, Kulan Mukhrot Basar Shchuta. You have 9 butcher stores that sell kosher meat. Achat Mukharet Basar Nevela. And you have 1 butcher store that sells non-kosher meat. Lakach Me'achat Mehem. And you purchased from one of the 10 stores that were there. And you have no idea from which store you purchased it. Sveko Asur. In that situation, it's a safek, and we consider it to be Asur. The reason being, as Tosfot says, is because we consider it to be kol kavua. Anything that's fixed in place is kemechsa mechsa. It's the equivalent of 50-50 in those situations. We don't look at the statistical sample anymore. Some can try to argue that it's a logical argument, which is that you can only look at statistical probabilities when something has been taken away from those fixed locations. But if you entered those fixed locations, we look at it as being a 50-50 chance that you went into the kosher or non-kosher store, even though the probabilities are 9/10 that you went into a kosher store. But since the isur is fixed in place, and the isur is kavua, fixed and known, we consider it as to be a 50-50 probability. And like many, Rav Elchanan Wasserman in his commentaries notes that he thinks that it's a gzeirat hakatuv, that that is the case. And Tosfot adds, v'hada kaimel amidoraita, what about the Torah principle, chad betrei batel? And if you have 2-1, then it's always batel. So why don't you say the same thing here with 9-1? Hainu hecha shim urav, venu nikara isur. That's only when it's well mixed, and the isur is not easily identifiable. Avacha, yadua ha isur biduchte. Isur is known and identifiable in its place, and that's why you have a problem. V'chanut ha-mocheret basar nevela. Ubedavar chashuv, and if it's something of significance, afilu mi'urav lo batil, even if they are mixed together, then it's not considered to be batel. That we know from other places in Shas, whereby if you have items of significance or that have inherent significance to them, they cannot be mivutal. The Talmud says, first of all, bitul only works when it's mi'urav, it's mixed together, and it also is in a case where the isur is not identifiable. Over here, we know where the isur is, we just don't know how you interacted with it, but we know exactly where the isur is, and we know where the heter is. That makes it kol kavua kemechsa mechsa dami, and therefore you will not be able to eat that meat that you had purchased in one of the stores. On the other hand, uvenimtza, if you find meat out on the street, aleich achar rov, then you go after the rov. So now again, you have the same problem. Why isn't this considered to be basar shenita leminayin? You just found it out on the street. Why isn't this considered to be something that lacks proper supervision? So where it says, achanami benimtza biad oved kochavim. Again, it's an instance when you found it in the possession of an Oved Kochavim. So the Rabbeinu Gershom explains over here, what does it mean, Nimtza Biyad Oved Kochavim? Which is, Klomar, Damrinanle, we asked the non-Jew, Man Yahiv Lach HaBisra, who gave you this meat? Yisrael Yahiv Lach, if he got it from a Jew, then it's Mutar. Y Oved Kochavim Yahiv Lach Asur, if a non-Jew gave it to him, then it would be Asur. So we're assuming if it came from a Jew, then it must be that he had kosher meat. If it came from a non-Jew, we don't know, and then it's more problematic. That's the view of the Rabbeinu Gershom. The more mainstream way to view this is that simply that the Oved Kochavim solves your problem of basar shenita leminayin. Once you've solved your problem of basar shenita leminayin, then the question is, what type of meat does this Oved Kochavim have? Here, that's called the parush me ruba parush. Whatever is left the stores, then, once it's left the stores, we assume it came from the rove, because it's no longer something where the safek arose while you were in one of the stores. The safek arose, because now you find the meat outside. And this Oved Kochavim has no clue where he bought it, or someone gave it to him and he has no clue where it came from. In that instance, you can rely on the rove and it is kasher. So the Oved Kochavim mitigates the issue of basar shenita leminayin. The kashrut issue then falls to the din of rove. Here you have kol deparish, Meruba parish. Anything that leaves the rove is considered to be whatever the rove is. And over here, it's clearly that the majority of butcher stores are kosher butcher stores. Now, the Rishonim point out that if you had visibility on the goy purchasing it in one of these stores and leaving one of the stores, then that would not could be under the rubric of called the parish, Meruba parish, although that would already make it into kavua. The only reason it's called Meruba Parish is when the discovery and the safek arose once it was already away from the store. But in the situation where you saw him exiting a store, and say, for instance, that store sells both kosher and non-kosher meat, and we have no idea what he bought, and he doesn't remember what he bought, that situation, that would be a kol kavua kemechsa mechsa dummy, Or in a situation where he's exiting from a place which has two stores, and you see him coming out, again, that would be kol kavua, kemeksa meksa domi, because over there, they laid that the safek took place at a point when you were still in the position of kavua. It's only when the laid that the safek happens when it's parush, that we say kol marish, me rubo kol parish, and for that reason, then we would follow the rove. So you've mitigated basar shenita leimanayin, and then you have rove, which then solves your problem. The Baalei Tosafot are bothered by this, because then, why doesn't that help explain all the cases before with the makolin? All these times when we had the meat stalls, we said, well, if it's in a place where they announce if there's a treifa, then on a day they announce from a treifa, you can't eat from any of the stalls on that day. He says, why not? The treifa is one item, and the robe of the basar in the market is still kosher meat. So why can't you rely on that robe and buy the meat? And similarly, in a place, Shein Machrizim, in a place where they never announce, so the chashash is that maybe someone sold a treifa or nevela to a goy, but that, again, is not the robe. The majority of situations are that the kosher meat is what's going into the marketplaces, because the robe tabachim around here are kosher butchers. If that's the case, why can't we rely on that, both in a place, Shein Machrizim, as well as in a place where they're Machrizim, and they were Machriz, why can't we still rely on the robe? So the Baalei Tosafot suggests that in the case of the makolim, maybe you would have to argue that that is kavua, that when you go to the makolim, even though the meat is sourced from somewhere else and the robe starts somewhere else, the makolim themselves are considered to be kavua, and since the meat stalls or the shuk where the meat is considered to be kavua, we would classify that as kol de kavua is kemeksa meksa domi. So he solves the problem with regards to the stalls, but then he says of akasha, the basar nintza b'yadovei kuchavim shelo b'makolim, how come in the case where a non-Jew has the meat, not in the meat stalls, asur b'yom shechrizu? We still say it's problematic in a situation where there was a treifa announced that day, or in a case where there is no announcements ever made. Why then don't we say that that's called the parish, meruba ka parish, and go after the rove? So Tosafot answers in the end that enochanami, we should have done that. And enochanami, it should be kasher the meat. But near the dekanta ba'almahu shasu chachamim. It is a takanat chachamim. Then in a place where they don't make announcements, we just don't buy from non-Jews because of this chashash. It's a minority. Rove should govern. It should be okay to buy from them. Nevertheless, lechatchila, we tell you not to buy from them. And similarly, in places where they make those announcements, and on that day they say, don't buy it because there's a good possibility there's a trait for being moved around in the shuk because we know we sold it to an Ovi Kochavim today. Nevertheless, lechatchila, you shouldn't buy it. Even though the rove would dictate otherwise. So he sees it as the chachamim imposing a certain dictate over here in order to eliminate any chashash, not to have worries about the problems of lifne iver or the besar treifa getting into the market and getting mixed up. Again, even though you can rely on rove, in cases where we can avoid it, we will try to avoid it and not rely on the rove. And that's takana over here. And he says we have a similar idea with regards to begin kilayim as well, that we don't allow you to sell it to a non-Jew, maybe he'll sell it to another Jew. And again, there, a la rove, the begadim don't have kilayim in them. So it should have been fine to do this, even if he does sell it to another Jew, because in general, we'll assume it came from the rove, and it should be fine. In all of these instances, in order to protect the consumers, in order to protect anybody from violating any sort, the chachamim imposed the takana that we don't rely on rove in these situations. And then Tosafot does add another principle over here, which is that in the Gemara Pesachim, in times when you call the parish, Erubakal parish, sometimes there were gozer that even there we won't follow the rove, because maybe then you'll come to take from the kavua. The Tosafot says that's only true where when the kavua has a mix between that which is heter and that which is isur. Over there where there's a mix-up of the heter isur, or it's undiscernible what's the heter and isur, then we worry about if we say kol de parish miruba kol parish is mutar, then people will go and take it from the kavua as well, which would not have been mutar. But in our situation where the isur is clearly delineated and separate, that's the non-kosher butcher store, and then the butcher stores that are kasher are totally identifiable and easily discernible, in that case we're not going to say if we're matir kol de parish miruba kol parish, that people will also be matir by kavua, because they know that there's a difference and it's clear where the Easter and Heter are. They're not going to make that mix up and take from the non-Gosher butcher store, assuming that it came from the rove. So for that reason, we're not Gozer over here. And then he brings a principle of the Rabbeinu Tam, that he was Matir, Kishenichna Zev Veder, a wolf that went into the flock and then caused Trefot. And we know that he bit into or clawed a number of the sheep in the flock, but we don't know which ones they are. We can't find them afterwards. Rabbeinu Tam was matter in that case, any one individual sheep that he took out of the flock, it was called a parish, meruba ko parish, and the majority of the animals in that situation were not trefot, were not nidrasim, and therefore he was matir it. Ve'nira, and the Baal HaTos would say, you don't think that Rabbeinu Tam is assessing this properly. Eladavka she'isur yadua, kiri pirashti. We only say that it's called the parish, meruba ko parish, when the isur is clearly identifiable and separate and delineated. Over here, we don't even know where the isur is. Then you can't argue that you say, called the parish, meruba ko parish, over there where there's a mix-up of the heter isur. Then we worry about if we say, called the parish, meruba ko parish is mutar, then people will go and take it from the kavu as well, which would not have been mutar. Or another way of saying that is that the leidat ha-safek already took place when they were kavua. It's not that when your animal comes out that there's all of a sudden a leidat ha-safek. The leidat ha-safek took place when they were all together. Now when you're taking something away and pulling it away, all you're doing is taking the kavua and making it parush. But you're doing that, or you're actively making it into parush, then it doesn't change the fact that the safek happened when they were kavua. And for that reason, the Baal HaTosafot don't think that that heter of the Rabbeinu Tam works in this case by the flock. Now the Gemara says, okay, tashma, matza ba basar, if he found basar, aleich acharov tabachim. If you found basar, it sounds like basar out on the street that you found. You go after the robe of the tabachim in the city, and we say, call the parish, miruba ka parish. Be'im mevushal, if the meat's already cooked, aleich achar rovo klei basar. Then you don't go by the number of butchers, you go by the number of residents in the city. Because that means that anybody in the city could have cooked this piece of meat, and it fell from somebody who did cook the piece of meat. It wasn't cooked by the butchers, it was cooked by somebody who purchased it. Now we have to think, who are the majority of the population in this city? Based on that population, then we'll determine whether the rove are Jews or the rove are non-Jews, and that will give you the classification of this meat. So now again, here you have problems of basar shenita lei min ayin. Now there's raw basar on the ground, and then there's cooked basar that you find. If you say again that it's a case where an obed kuchavim is in possession of the meat, then in terms of the raw meat, that's not a problem. Because then you can just assume again, kol the parish meruba ka parish, and that'll be fine to get rid of the basar nitalei me'ayin, because it was mishtamer yedei denachri, and the robe will dictate that it's kosher meat. But mevushal, aleich achar ruchlei vach basar. Wait a minute. If you're telling me now when it's cooked, you go after the majority of the population over here, if an ovei kochavim is holding it, or there's somebody in possession of it, next day, id ovei kochavim nakilei, id Yisrael nakilei. You should check out, figure out whether he got that from a Jew, or he is a Jew, or that he is a goy, or he got it from a goy, and then you'll know whether it was a problem of the bishul or not. Meaning that the problem there is a dual problem. You have basar shenitalei min ayin. You also have a problem of bishul akum over there, or that the akum is cooking it. Then you have a separate issue, which would also make it problematic to eat. And so if you say it was biyad ovei kochavim, it solves the basar shenitalei min ayin, but leaves you with the problem of bishul akum, and leaves you with the problem of the sourcing of this meat. So the Gemara says, hacha ma'eskinan, he sees the individual from the time that he had the meat in his hand till the time that he dropped the meat. So he knows that it was already under supervision because he sees the person who dropped it. So the person who dropped it had it supervised during that time. Once it was dropped, he had his eye on that piece of meat. And therefore, the meat itself is not a problem with basar shenitalei min ayin. Once you get to the meat, you can't find out who had it because the person that dropped it is gone. And so you can't ask them whether they were a Jew or a non-Jew or where they sourced it from, but it's meat that's mevushal. Now you go after the rove of the population of the city because they would have been the one that would have cooked the basar. And the basic idea is that people don't hold on to raw meat. Once they have the raw meat, they go straight away and they cook the meat up. So the person who's in possession of the raw meat probably got the raw meat locally. So we're not worried about kashrut issues in terms of the raw meat. What we're worried about is the bishul aspects of the raw meat, because it was sourced locally, and if it was cooked recently, then it was something that was sourced right away. And if it was sourced right away, we know the rov tabchei Yisrael. So we know the meat is kosher, we just don't know if the bishul was okay. So tashma. So now we bring a mishnah from Shkalim. Nimtza bigvulin. If you find outside of the migdash, evarim, limbs, an animal that was cut up into limbs, nevelot, you can assume that it's a nevelah. Because that's what they do to dispose of a nevela, is they don't cut it into pieces, they simply cut it into limbs to dispose of it. So if you find it strewn like that, you can assume it's a nevela. Chatichot, if you find it in pieces sliced up, not by limbs, then mutarot. Then you can assume that it was kosher meat because someone took the trouble to cut it up. In this case here also, you're running into a problem with basar shenita lemin ayin because you found it out in the street. So now that you found it, whether it was chatuch or it was evarim, it should be problematic because of the basar shenita lemin ayin. Now, the Mishnah is in contrast to another situation, which is when you find the same things within the Azara, the items that you find there, if you find them in nitachim, in pieces cut up into limbs, then it's most likely an olah. If you find it cut up into pieces, then it's most likely a chatat or an asham, because the chatat and asham are eaten by the kohanim. The olah is cut into nitachim and put on the mizbeach. So that would be true in the Azara. What we're speaking about here in this part of the Mishnah is in the gvulin, and in the gvulin, that which is sliced up, somebody put the effort in to slice it up, in all likelihood it's kosher meat, and of course we're speaking about a place that is rove tabchei Yisrael, majority of butchers there are kosher, so you assume that the meat is kosher because somebody took the effort to cut it up. If it's strewn or thrown away in nitachim, then you assume it's a nevela. But if that's true, then both those instances you have basar shenita lemin ayin. So you give me the same answer you gave before, which is, it's a case where you saw it the whole time. You saw the person who chopped it up, cut it up, and left, and then left it there, so you had your eye on it the whole time. Then, evarim nevelot amai. So if it was cut into pieces or nitachim, but you saw them cutting it up, then why would you assume that it's not kosher meat? Why would you assume that it's a nevela? It's when you found it tossed out like that, you assume that it was cut up to be a nevela. But when you see the actual person cutting it up, there's no reason to believe that what he's cutting up is a nevela when he's taking the time to chop it up. Or when it's a case where it just fell away from him and it didn't seem like he was doing it to throw it out. So once again, if you tell me there's somebody who was watching it, it just means that he was cutting it up and then he forgot something or he left something there. And that's how you saw it. But that doesn't mean he was throwing it out or trying to put it in the garbage and that's a nevela. So then why should it be classified as a nevela? Gemara says, that's not a problem. Midahu taima elol rav. The question here is on Rav, who says, basar shenita lemin ayin is asur. And the question is from the chatichot and not the evarim. The evarim, we assume, are nevelot because they were tossed out that way. So in an instance where there was nobody supervising and you didn't see it, then we understand the din with the evarim. What we don't understand is the din by the chatuchot that you're allowed to eat it, because that's basar shenita lemin ayin. And the Gemara says, midai taima elul rav. You wanted to say this whole problem where this, it raised this issue with regards to Rav's statement. Rav has a different version of the Mishnah. And that is Hayit Marla. On that Mishnah, Rav says, Rav Amar mutarot mishum nevela. When it says there mutarot, doesn't mean mutarot ba'achila the chatichot. All it means is that they are not considered to be a nevela. Since they didn't treat it like a nevela, we won't deem it to be a nevela vadai, and you won't get malkot on it, and we won't penalize you as if it's a nevela or make you tamei. Nevertheless, you still can't eat it because it is basar shenita lemin ayin. But Levi Amar mutarot ba'achila. And Levi says there's no problem, you can eat it, because it's not an issue of nevela, because they were cut up, and it's not a problem of basar shenita lemin ayin. From here it seems that Levi argues on this principle of Rav with regards to basar shenita lemin ayin. But then again, that's not something that would undermine this position of Rav, because Rav the Shita Do says it's actually asur ba'achila. Ba'ad Rav, this position of Rav, that basar shenita lemin ayin is asur, la beferush itmar, was not said explicitly, ela mechlola itmar. But it was an inference from the following story. The Rav Hava Yotiv Amavra de Ishtit. Rav was crossing on a ferry or a raft across the river of Ishtit. Chazulah Gavra. He was watching an individual to have come in Chaver Reisha. He was cleaning a head of an animal that had been shechted. Nofo Minay. It fell out of his hands into the river. Aizel Aiti Silta. He went ahead and brought a woven basket. That's what Rashi calls it. If you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says that it is Chatichashel Eitz. It was a piece of wood, both of which were used for fishing things out of the water. Shada, he put it into the water. Asik train. And guess what? Two heads came out. He had only dropped one in there, and all of a sudden two came up in this case. Amarav, Abde Nami Hochi. Is this a normal occurrence? Is this something that makes any sense? If you drop one in and then you take two out, clearly both of them are not the ones that he was working on. In that case, Asrinu Nihale. He says they are both asurim, because we have no idea what came out of the water in this instance. So Amrlei Rav Kahana, Rav Asi l'Rav. So his Talmidim, Rav Kahana, Rav Asi said to Rav, why are you being osur over here? Di sura shchiche, tehetera lo shchiche. How could it be that you're making asur? You're assuming here that whatever it was fished out of here was asur, because it's frequent to find things that are asur. It's not frequent to find things that are kasher. But they said to him, what are you talking about? This is a Jewish city. This is a place where many Jews work on the edge of the river. And it's actually the case that there's more heter here than isur. So why don't we assume that whatever he picked out, one of them was the head that he was working on, and the other one came from the robe, and the robe of the stuff around here is kosher. Amar lehu di isura shchichei tfei, because there's more isur over here. So Rav says it's more likely that there is isurim here, and based on Rashi and the Tosfot said before, you have a high chashash, or you have an issue that anybody would have exchanged this item out, meaning birds or animals that could have brought this to here, could have brought it from anywhere around this area. And that means that you're not just looking at the robe of the local meat or the local heads that are there. You have to look at the totality of the heads around the surrounding areas. And there already you're reaching a point where the Isura is more Shriach. And so people thought the reason that Rav was Oserovir was because it was Basar Shen Nitalei Minayin. And given that, there's a likelihood, there's a decent possibility based on the robe of non-kosher items around the vicinity that that could have been Isur that was in the river. Or given what the Balamor said before, the fact that it was thrown into the river already maybe is an indication of something wrong with this item. And then that makes it that it's more likely that it's an Avela and not something that's kosher. For that reason, Rav was Oser. Where it says, V'chi mechlala, my. Why is that an inference? Sounds like it's pretty straightforward that Rav thinks that even though you had robe Tabachai Yisrael in the locale over here, nevertheless, we worry about Basar Shenita Lemanai, and that's why you made it Asur. Where it says, no, the situation there was Parvata Dovdei Kochavim Habai. It was a port for loading and unloading goods for the non-Jews, meaning that it was a heavy commercial area and many boats came through the area. So even though locally, again, the majority of meat was kosher meat, nevertheless, you had many workers and boats that were coming in doing transacting and bringing merchandise and commercial goods, and anything could have fallen off those boats or from the people working on those boats. So in this area of the water, there is just as big a chance or maybe even a bigger chance that that which fell into the water came from one of those boats or from one of the commercial ships that was there. And therefore, it's more likely that it's Isur than it was of Heter. And if that's the case, it happens to be a part of the circumstance that Rav was paskening. That's why it's not obvious that Rav said it. But we inferred or thought that's what Rav was saying. But you have a reason why you might have believed that Rav does not hold the Basar Shenita Lemanai, because it could have been that he paskened this way because of the frequency of non-Jews entering into that area or entering into that port. Teda, that might likely be what Rav was saying over here, the Kamalu, Isura Shchicha Tvei, because there's more Isur over here, implying it had to do with something in the vicinity that was causing it that there's more Isur here, even though, or despite the fact that there were Rov Tabchei Yisrael. That makes more sense, explaining it because of the docking of the non-Jews there, rather than claiming that it was Basar Shenita Lemanayim. Now, the Ran says over here, that despite the fact that Gemara says that it's Michlola Itmar, it's not certain, but we inferred it, and there are reasons to believe that Rav doesn't think Basar Shenita Lemanayim from the story. Nevertheless, the truth is that Rav does believe Basar Shenita Lemanayim, even though here it's Michlola, we saw before in his Machloket with Levi that he clearly says that, and we're going to see in the upcoming story that Rav clearly holds Basar Shenita Lemanayim. So even though in this story it happens to be Michlola, because there's a possibility of explaining it another way, nevertheless, that really is the position of Rav. The other thing is that the Baal Tosfot point out that Rav over here was Oser only because he brought up two heads in the basket or the piece of wood when he pulled them out of, dredged them out of the water. Had he only pulled up one head from the water, it sounds like from here that Rav would have been Matir. And that's what Tosfot says. Yilo asik al achad, had he only brought up one head, lo ya Oser. Shereya ra'ash, lo ya sham orev. Because Rav looked in the vicinity and he saw there were no ravens flying around the area. Because we do worry about ravens, but if there are no ravens around, we're not going to worry about it. He was there watching. There were no animals around. So when he saw him drop it in and pull it out, he dropped one in, he pulled one out. We can assume that the same one he dropped in is the one that he pulled out. But once he pulled out two heads, so we know for sure at least one of them is not the one that he dropped in. In that case, we start to worry about that, whether Orvin brought it from somewhere else or dropped it in here, because this could have been there for a while. This could have come from some other time. We don't have visibility as to where that item came. Again, if we pull that one after one that dropped in, you can assume the one that dropped in is the one that you pulled out. Once you enter another factor variable in there, then you have to start to question where the origins were, and that becomes a problem of Basar Shenitaleim Minayin. So then the Gemara asks a very simple question, El Rav, Eche Achel Bisra, has Rav ever eat meat? How does he ever have meat that he never left his eye that was not Basar Shenitaleim Minayin? Because there's always a time. He goes to sleep at night. There are always opportunities for the meat to be outside of the watchful eye of someone. It says, "Shate delo alim eneminet." In a case where they shechted it, he watched it the whole time. They cooked it up and they made it and he ate it right away. So one way is just in a very controlled environment, then he could eat it. Ibaidema, the more likely answer is, Bitsaira Bechatuma. It's in a case where it's tied up and has a sign or a seal on it. Because in that case, once you have it tied up and a chotem on it, you have a way to identify the meat. Now, if the meat got mixed up, you would know that because you have it wrapped up, tied up, and with the chotem on it, that already is identification or a way to ensure that the meat that you're getting is the same meat that you put down. So even if it leaves your vision or supervision, you still know when you get it back, you can identify it based on those factors. Inami, or it can be simona. In an instance where he creates a siman in the meat itself, like the practice of Rabbi Barahuna used to cut it into triangles instead of the normal way that meat was cut in order to identify it. And since they always cut their meat that way, it was an indication that this was the meat and it didn't come from somewhere else because nobody else did that. It was a strange practice and it was unusual, unique to these individuals. And so if you had a triangle and you found a triangle, you know that it was the meat that you had put there and not some other meat that was swapped out. So the solutions to the problem are either you keep constant supervision over it, or if you don't have constant supervision, you have to replace that with some sort of mechanism that indicates to you that it's the same meat that you left there as the meat that you're picking up afterwards. That's either through tzror v'chatima, or it's a case where you have a particular siman in the meat itself that makes it identifiable. Rav Avagazil lebei Rav Chanan Chatnei. So Rav is going to visit his son-in-law, Rav Chanan Bar Rava. Chazam Mavra. When he was going to travel and cross the river, as he came to the river's edge, the raft or the ferry was approaching him. So sometimes he had to wait for the ferry or call the ferry. This time he happened to get there right as the ferry was coming, and he saw that as a good omen. Here I have a ferry coming to greet me and take me. I don't have to have any waiting time here. Yom Tova Lego. So this is going to be a good day. It's a Siman Tov, and we have a big feast awaiting us when we arrive there. Azal Kama Baba. So he went to his son-in-law's house and he was waiting by the door. Odik Bibiza Didasha. He looked through a crack in the door. Kazichyuta Didalya. He saw a piece of meat or he saw an animal that was hanging from the ceiling that was going to be prepared for the feast. Tarafa Baba. He knocked on the door. Nafakato Kuleyamalape. Everybody came to greet him. Everybody ran to him. Atatab Chenami. And even the cooks and the butchers that were working there, everybody in the house came to greet Rav. He's the gadol ador. He's also the father-in-law, the grandfather over there. So everybody came running to greet him. Lo alim Rav einei minei. Rav kept his eye on the meat the whole time. Amar lahu. Then he chastises them and says, Iku hashta svitu lahu isura, the bnei brat. Is it true here that they're going to feed my grandson non-kosher meat or isura? So obviously it's his son-in-law's Rav Chanan Bar Rava married to Rav's daughter, and he's speaking about their child that they had. So his grandchild, you're going to feed him meat because of the fact that it was basar shenita leminayin. Everybody forgot about the meat, left it behind, and it's only because Rav kept his eye on it that it wasn't basar shenita leminayin. And Rav thought, if I wasn't here, then they would have not kept their eye on it, and they were not makbin on basar shenita leminayin. From here, Tosfot says, why don't we say this is the source for the fact that Rav believes that basar shenita leminayin is a sort. Tosfot says you can't prove anything from here, and maybe even the case before, because it could be in situations where it was a rov tabchei ovdei kochavim. Could be a city in which the majority of the butchers, the majority of the meat in that city, was non-kosher meat. If that's the situation, then you need basar shenita leminayin because you need to keep supervision over it, because if it gets swapped out, you don't have the rov to rely on that it's kosher meat. And that's what the problem of basar shenita leminayin could be. That's the more normal problem of meat not having a supervision or meat not having some sort of marking on it, is that the majority of meat is non-kosher and it can be swapped out for non-kosher meat. In a case where the situation we spoke about before, it was in places where the majority was kosher meat, and that's why you didn't have that problem. So it was a separate problem of basar shenita leminayin. There is a core fundamental problem with kashrut. And therefore Tosfot says you can't prove anything here with regards to basar shenita leminayin, because the cases here could be where it wasn't rov tabchei Yisrael. So lo achal Rav mehu bisra. Interestingly enough, Rav did not eat from that meat, which is somewhat perplexing because he did keep his eye on the meat the whole time. My time, Gemara wants to know what exactly was bothering him. Why didn't he eat from the meat? Imishum ilume, if it's because there was basar shenita leminayin, halo ilim, tizayin never left the meat. He kept it, so there wasn't basar shenita leminayin. Ela, the nachesh. Rav was upset about the fact that he was divining on his way there. When he mentioned the fact that the raft came to, or the ferry came to greet them, that he saw that as a siman tov, they're going to have a great suda that day, he thought he was divining a little bit. He might have been in violation of nichush, and therefore he was penalizing himself by not having the meat that night. Where it says, Vamar Rav, who says that this was nichush? Call nachash, she'enu kele'ezer eved Avraham, u'kuyonotan ben Shaul, enu nachash. Any type of divining that is done that's not like Eliezer did when he was at the well waiting for Rivka, and he davens to Hashem and he gives these simanim that tell him that this is the girl, and he gives her the gifts even before he knows that it's the right girl or from the right family. So that's type of nichush. Or Yonatan ben Shaul, when he goes out to fight the Plishtim alone with his arms bearer, and he says, if we hear them in the camp saying such and such, that means we're going to win and we should just attack them ourselves. If we don't hear that, or we hear something else, we'll go back and get the rest of the am and not do it on our own. But he saw that again as a siman to trigger his behavior. So these individuals who use the nichush to trigger their behavior, that's something that is a problem of nichush. But that's not what Rav did in this case. Rav didn't predicate his actions on that divining. He just said that it was a good omen that which had happened. He wasn't using that to divine or to make a decision about what he should do in the future. So then why couldn't he eat from the meat? Ela sudat harishut havai. It was not a sudat mitzvah. And Rav didn't want to get benefit or enjoy any sudat rishut. And Rav didn't like to eat, whether it's meat from a sudat that wasn't a sudat mitzvah, or he didn't like to be a part of a great feast unless it was a sudat mitzvah. And Rashi over here says that an example of a sudat rishut is Bat Talmud Chochom Ne'amaretz, which is one of the examples that's brought in the Gemara and Psochem as to a sudat rishut, is when a Bat Talmud Chochom gets married to an Amaretz. That's a classification of a sudat rishut. It's very hard to understand that in this context because, first of all, his son-in-law and daughter were already married and they already had a grandson and his name was Rav Chanan bar Rava. So it doesn't seem to be that Rashi is giving you the circumstance over here. He's just bringing you an example of a sudat rishut. And this also was for Rav's coming to visit them that they were having a sudat. And that's not a sudat mitzvah. That was just a sudat rishut. And Rav didn't want to eat meat or didn't want to partake in a sudat rishut. That's the reason that he declined or demurred in this case, but it's not because of any other halachic reason, because he prevented the halachic problem by keeping his eye on the meat the whole time. Rav bodik b'mavra, as we saw before, Rav used to see as an omen the ferries coming in and out. Shmo bodik b'safra, he used to check by opening up a sefer to a page and seeing where it came out, based on where the page was, that would give him indications about things. Rav Yochanan bodik b'yinoka, and Rav Yochanan used to check by asking the young children in the Beit Midrash what they were learning, and to tell them the psukim they were learning, and based on that pasuk, he would also use that as an indication for what he should do. So kulu shanei derav, all the time that Rav was alive, habakotav le'Rav Yochanan, when Rav Yochanan was in correspondence with Rav, he used to write le'kadam rabbeinu shebabavel. He would put as the salutation on the letter that he was writing, le'kadam rabbeinu shebabel. He'd give him tremendous respect to the tremendous Rav that's in Bavel. Kinach nafshei, after Rav passed away, of a cut of the Shmuel, then he was corresponding with Shmuel, the Kadam Chavarenu Shebavel. He was now using a salutation that said to our friend or to our peer in Bavel. So when it was Rav, he spoke to him as Rabbeinu. Now when it comes to Shmuel, he speaks to him as a peer. Amar lo yodali mide de Rabbeana? Does he not know that I'm his Rebbe? Meaning that why did he call Rav Rabbeinu? And Shmuel saying to himself, why doesn't he call me Rabbeinu? Katav shadar le ibura de shittin shane. He went ahead and he wrote out the calendar for 60 years and how the leap year should look over 60 years and did all the calculations, sent it over to Rabbi Yochanan to show him that he was a master of this stuff and that Rabbi Yochanan should show him the respect of being a Rebbe. Amar hashto chushbana ba'ama yodo. Rabbi Yochanan dismissed it and just said he's a good mathematician. Doesn't mean he knows halacha. Doesn't mean that he is a Rebbe. Katav shadar le tlesar gamle sveke treifato. And then afterwards he sent to him, it sounds from here like third camel loads full of treifot that Shmuel had paskind on or had sfeikot about them, and he sent them to Rabbi Yochanan. Or the way that the girsa of the Balei Tosafot, which he brings from the Main Yochanan, is tlesar gviloi, that these were 13 parchments of questions or sfeikot that Shmuel had faced or answered. And you can see both the girsa and the Balei Tosafot and Rashi is tresar, which is 12 and not 13. Rashi says that it's a derech guzma, lav davka, tresar gamle, that it was just an exaggeration, not real. And it's also tied into stories earlier in the Masechta, back on Daf Nun Amud Aleph in Kaf Chet Amud Bet, where Rava says about his son Rav Yosef, Chokim Bri B'Treifot Ki Rav Yochanan, that my son is great in Treifot, just like Rav Yochanan. And over there, Rashi brings two interpretations. Like Rav Yochanan in his general Pesukei Halacha, I mean he was a Talmud Chacham, and my son is just as good as him in Treifot, like he is in everything else. And then Rashi brings a Lishna Achrina, that Rabbi Yochanan was a super chacham in Treifot, because Shmuel sent him these 12 camel loads worth of sfeikot for Pesach Halacha. So Rashi takes it as if that Shmuel was sending this to Rabbi Yochanan to get Pesach Halacha, as if Rabbi Yochanan was an expert in Treifot, but our Gemara really sees it the other way around, that Shmuel was demonstrating to Rabbi Yochanan his tremendous erudition inside of Treifot. But again, Rashi quotes that as a source from both the fact that Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel were great in Treifot, and in our Gemara, it's Shmuel turns out to be the one that Rabbi Yochanan now comes to respect through that which he said to him. So once Rabbi Yochanan saw that, Amar Itli Rav Bavel, whoa, not a peer, he really is my Rebbe over there. And that was Shmuel's intention. Shmuel wanted Rabbi Yochanan to know that he should be sending him questions and asking him things as a Rebbe and not view him as a peer. So he was doing it l'shem shemayim, not out of an issue of kavod. Izel Ichzeh. So Rabbi Yochanan says, if he's my Rebbe, I gotta go see him. I should go visit him. Amar le Yenoka Psukle Psukeich. Says to one of the young children, why don't you give me a pasuk? Amar le Ushmuel Meit. Quotes him from Shmuel Aleph, that Shmuel had passed away. Amar Shmamina Nachnam Shei de Shmuel. So you see there that Shmuel passed away already. Velohi, it wasn't true. Lo Shachim Shmuel. Shmuel had not passed away. Okay, Kadol Litrach Rabbi Yochanan. It was a siman min ha-shamayim, that they didn't want Rabbi Yochanan to have to be bothered or have to make that long trip to Bavel. So they gave him a pasuk that prevented him from going. And it was for kavod of Rabbi Yochanan, but not because Shmuel really had died. But you see, Rabbi Yochanan relied on these psukim of the children. Now, we're going to do the last memra over here, and then after that we'll come back and discuss all of this divining that's going on, which seems to be problematic. So Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Olazo Omer, bayit tinok v'isha, a new house, a new child, or a new wife, even though you don't use them for nichush, and you can't say, because I have a new wife, therefore I should do something. You can't use them as a siman. That's only if it happens three times. Dichtiv, as Yaakov says with regards to losing his children one by one, Yosef enenu, v'shimonu enu, bet Binyamin tikachu, and now you're going to take Binyamin. If something happens to him, that's three. Once that three, it's locked in that we're in trouble now, and the bad is going to continue to happen. So now, Rashi, in explaining over here what that means, that there is no nichush, but there is siman, he says, shasur lenachesh, lismocha nichush. You can't rely on it. You can't exercise a decision based on, oh, now I have a new wife, so now I should do this. Or, now I have a new child, or I have a new house, now I should do this. That's nichush, because you're predicating your action on that which is being done now, and you're saying, that siman is telling me to do something. On the other hand, yesh siman means simano be'alma hava miha. Nevertheless, it does give you an indication. Di matzlach b'schora rishona. If you have a business transaction after you have a new house, after you have a new wife or a new child, and it's successful, and then you do it again, and you do it again, and you have three successful transactions after something like that, that gives you an indication that whatever happened, some things are going well for you now, and there's a change, whether it's in your mazel, or it's a good siman that you should continue to do this and continue to transact and invest. On the other hand, if it was the other way around, you'd have a number of transactions that fail after this. Rashi says, are you a gear, let's say to Termidai, don't continue to invest so much, or don't continue down this path, because something's changed and things won't go so well for you. You need to change the venue or to change the approach that you have, because it's not succeeding in the manner that you're going. And again, the Gemara indicated through that statement of Rabbi Lazar, that's three times an indication. One or two can just be a happenstance. It's once you've already three times something's occurred after a significant event like this, you should take that as a sign whether to push forward and to do more, or to back off a little bit and maybe take a breather from the situation. Now, let's go back through the whole structure and understand what's going on here with regards to Nichush. Because in general, we have the idea that is found in the Gemara in Kretot, where we have indications from the Gemara that when you do things, you can do things that are a siman tov. You can do things that are a good omen for the future, or a hope, or a prayer for an omen in the future to lock in something in the future. But over here, all these situations, it seems to be that they're predicating decisions on this, and that is what you would call your classic type of nichush. Beyond that, the Gemara says that based on Rav's statement, that any nichush that's like the nichush of Eliezer and that of Yonatan ben Shaul is asur. That implies that what Eliezer did and what Shaul did was problematic. And that's exactly how the Rambam codifies it. It says, Katam Rambam, Beperek Aleph Michlot Avodah Zarah, V'chein Misimat Mos Simanim. If he makes signs, him Yerelo Kach V'kach Esed Devar Bloni. Something happens, I'm going to do such and such. V'lo Yerali Lo Aseh. And if it doesn't happen, I'm not going to do it. Kigon, Eliezer Eved Avraham. He brings these examples. Hakol Asur. All of that is Asur. The Rambam quotes the Gemara, directly what it says in our Gemara over here, which implies that Eliezer and Yonatan ben Shaul acted inappropriately in these cases. And the Rabban on the spot is Mesig on the Rambam. And he says, maybe the language of the Gemara caught him off guard, or he misunderstood it. Because how could it be that a tzaddik like Eliezer ben Avraham and Yonatan ben Shaul were doing nichush, and he made a mistake, and he understood the Gemara to say, don't do like them, because what they did was nichush, the Isur. And he says, that's not the way to read the Gemara. The way to read the Gemara is that it was leheter, that you can do nichush unless it's like the nichush of Yonatan ben Shaul and that of Eliezer ben Avraham, which it wasn't nichush. And the Ran says about that statement of the Raivad, to mehin be'enai. What he is saying makes no sense. Shari mefurash by Gemara. The inyan isur nehmar, that this is said about what you're not supposed to do and not what you are supposed to do. And therefore, it can't be that Eliezer ben Avraham and Yonatan ben Shaul are examples of things you should do, and the Rambam is right about this situation. But then, what do you do with the fact that Eliezer and Yonatan ben Shaul acted in this way? The Balya Tosafot answered that in the following manner. He says, and even if Eliezer wasn't Jewish, he still has a ben Noach. According to the Man D'Amar, that ben Noach is mitzuveh and kishuv and nichush, then it should have been a problem. So he says, v'yesh lomar da'utana savar shalonatan latzvidim ha'shigida lo bat mihi. That until she told him who she was, he didn't put on the rings and all the other stuff. But the pasuk says just the opposite. So Tosfot invokes the principle of ein muktam u'muchar b'Torah. All right, that's a nice idea, but why should you say it over here? He says because when Eliezer retells the story to Rivka's family, there he clearly says that he asked her the information first and then put the jewelry on her. So in the repetition of the story, it's clear that that happened second, and that he claims was what happened the first time too. But it was just because of Ein Mukdam U'Mu'achar B'Torah, it's said there first, but that's not really what happened. So that's how the Balya Tosfot will deal with it, to say that he had all the information before he acted, and therefore it wasn't a problem of Nihush. And Yonatan ben Shaul was also not an issue of Nihush, because he was going to attack either way. But Yeshomar Dele Zerezit Naro Amarkein, he was just trying to encourage his arms bearer, or the person that was with him, to go fight with him, so he gave him that Siman. But Yonatan was going, whether or not he got the information back. And so Tosfot says, in both these cases, they really didn't rely on it. They mentioned it, but that wasn't what they were relying on to make their decision, and that's why it's not considered to be nichush over here. On the other hand, the Ran says over here that they reasoned that by Eliezer and Yonatan ben Shaul, it was not considered to be nichush, is because nichush is only when you use something that is indiscriminate or something that is not a logical reason to make a decision. If a person is in their house and says, well, if it rains today, I'm not going out on my trip. If it doesn't rain, then I'm going on my trip. He says, that's not called nichush. That's what min hagol shel olam. That's just a good logical thing that person would do. If it's raining, I'm not traveling. If it's not raining, I am traveling. That's not looking for a siman. That's just making a decision based on logical variables that are being laid out. And he says the same thing with Eliezer Eved Avraham. He was using logic. He's saying that, of course, Yitzchak is looking for someone that is a balat chesed, and someone who has all of those tchunot, it's clear that she's got to be the right girl, and she likely comes from his family. And based on that logic, he was willing to use that as the mechanism. That's why it's not called nichush. And the same thing with Yonatan ben Shaul. He was trying to figure out if the enemy was already afraid, and therefore his attack would be much more impactful, even though it was only two of them, because they were already afraid or they were already worried. And then they would lead to them running away, and you wouldn't need the whole army. Or were they very brave, and they didn't care about what was going on, and then it would put up a much stronger fight against him. So he was using logic to dictate the decision, and it wasn't some sort of random or indiscriminate type of sign that told you whether you should go or you shouldn't go in that case. And that's the Ran's view over here, that nichush only applies when it's not a logical argument. And then the Ran says that when the Gemara says that any nichush that's not like that of Eliezer Avraham and Yonatan ben Shaul means that it's a nichush that involves a complete decision. that you're premising your decision on the Nikush. They happen not to be wrong because they had a logical reason for it. But if it's something that you're predicating your decision on it and it's not logical, then you have a problem of Nikush, even though what they did actually was not considered to be Nikush. Now, with regards to Rav over here, we don't have him make any logical argument over there. He was talking about a siman or an omen from the fact that the fairy came to greet him or didn't come to greet him. What the Ron suggests with regards to Rav is that Rav's decision was not dictated or governed by whether the fairy showed up or the fairy didn't show up. If the fairy showed up, he saw it as a siman tov. The fairy didn't show up, then he saw it as a not good sign. And even if he canceled his trip, he didn't cancel because the fairy wasn't there. There were other things that already were bothering him. He just, with that on top of it, he just said, forget it, I'm not going on the trip. But that wasn't the primary decision point or dictate as to why he did it. And for that reason, it's not considered to be Nikush when he made the decision surrounding the fairy coming to greet him. And he says you can make the same argument for Shmuel, who looked up in the book. The problem really is Rabbi Yochanan, because we see Rabbi Yochanan did make a decision based on the psukim that were read to him. He decided not to go to visit Shmuel and Bavel based on the pasuk that was read to him. So you see Rabbi Yochanan, first of all, is using this for making decisions, and he's using it not based on a logical argument, he's just using it based on a random pasuk that some child reads to him. So there, the Ron says that we know that since the time that Nevuah was taken away from Klal Yisrael, that the Nevuah went to the Shotim and the Ketanim. And therefore the Ketanim have Ke'en Nevuah, or a form of Nevuah, and therefore he says when he asked them for psukim, or psukli psukeich, it's a type of mini Nevuah that's being given, and therefore it's not a problem of Nichush, because it's really a type of Nevuah. And that's how he justifies that's what Rabbi Yochanan did in this practice. And then in closing, the Ron just mentions what Rashi says with regards to the business transactions about Bayit, Tinok, and Isha. He says the person here is not making decisions about what to do or what not to do based on these items. He's just seeing a pattern of behavior. And Rashi is suggesting that you should be more careful or a little more worried. If you see a pattern of failures one after the next, then it's a good idea to be cautious. Doesn't mean he won't do anything anymore. It's just a good idea to be cautious. Or you have a string of successes, then it's a good idea to take on more risks because you see the successes piling up. So it's not that he's making the decision based on that. It's just a way to give him some sort of foresight about what the pattern of behavior that's taking place over here. And therefore, he should either be careful or be less careful depending on that. But it's not really something that's triggering the decision at all. But as you can understand that, the Rambam and many of the other rationalists take a very strong stand against this type of behavior and practices of Nichush, because they see them as being part of the dark side or inappropriate ways to try to get to Hashem. And for them, they don't even work. They say it's just a bunch of illusionary types of signs and practices that do absolutely nothing. There are others like the Ramban and the others that have a more of a Kabbalistic lean to them that say that these do have powers and they do have the ability to give you direction or information, but the problem with them is that they don't give you context. And so you never know whether the information is really correct or what the context the information is given in. And therefore, the only way to do it and to be Tamim and Hashem, being Tamim is to rely on Hashem or a Navi who can give you both the information and the context. But if you rely on these things, it can be confusing. You can even make the wrong decisions. And that's why they tell people to shy away from them. And again, when we paskin aloha, that those are Tamim, B'yad Hashem should not be in these practices and should not worry about these simanim, even though they may not be impermissible per se, because, again, all the things that we spoke about here as to why they're not considered to be nichush. So, b'yimei Ravuna me Rav. So, Ravuna asked Rav, b'charuzin mahu. If you have meat that is strung together, what's the din with regard to that? Amalei, al tehi shote b'charuzin. Don't be crazy with the charuzin, or is that siman? It's no question that that's a siman. Meaning it's clearly not basar she'ne'ela min ha'ayin, because the meat is strung together, and that's a strong enough siman to know that that's the meat that you put there. Now, the Tosafot quotes from the Gemara in Elul Mitzvot with regards to the Tosefta over there that says that strung meat and fish is not considered to be a siman, that you have to return things for it. Everybody does it, so therefore it's not a strong siman. So here, Tosafot says there's a difference. In Elul Mitzvot, we're looking for a real siman in order to return it or to know it belongs to someone. Over here, we just need to have some semblance or indication or inkling that it's still the same thing that you put down before as that which is here now. So you don't need as strong a sign. If it was charuz, strung up, and then it's still strung up when you come back, that's a good enough reason to believe that which you left is the same item that you have before, and it's not a problem. A basar shenitalei min ha'ayin. Igadamrei, and some have it in the following manner. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, B'charuzin, in the case of strong meat, or is a siman. He states it as a statement rather than a question for Rav Huna, that charuzim act as a siman, it's not a problem of basar shenitalem inayin. Rav Nachman Nardo, ikla the gabi Rav Kana, the pum nahra. So Rav Nachman from Nardo, who comes to Pum Nahra to see Rav Kana, who's the Rosh Hashiva in Pum Nahra, the male yom kippuri, on erev yom kippurim. Atu Orve, a bunch of ravens came, shadu kavde vikulita. They dropped off a bunch of livers and kidneys. Amalei shkol v'achol, said, pick it up, take it, you can eat it. Hayidna de tera shkiach. Today, it's clearly the robe of meat that's being used in this area is clearly kosher meat, because everybody, as we knew before, we saw in the Mishnah earlier on, that's one of the four times a year where we worry about people shechting otov epeno, because so many people are shechting meat on Erev Yom HaKippurim, at least in the Galil. But it was true of the practices with regards to oaf in other places, and therefore what they dropped off was definitely that of Heter. Now, the real question is Rav Kahana then arguing on his Rebbe Rav, who says that Basar Shenitalem Inayin is problematic? And over here you see Rav Kahana saying that Basar Shenitalem Inayin seems to be just fine, as long as you have robe that it is kasher, it seems to be that it was robe tabchei, he would also agree that Basar Shenitalem Inayin is not a problem. So the Baal Tosfot at the top of the Amud make a distinction. And it says that, actually, Rav Kahana also subscribes to Basar Shenitalem Inayin. The difference here had to do with the vicinities around the city, which is how far the ravens could bring food. For Rav, in the vicinity or the area where the Basar was, the ravens outside of the city limits could bring it from non-kosher areas, and they could reach in flight from those areas. Therefore, he thought that the robe was not kosher, but rather the robe was non-kosher because of all the cities around. For Rav Kahana, he believed that the Urim flight path or the areas around Pum Nahra were all kosher areas, and therefore the majority was kosher in anywhere a raven would have come from. And for that reason, he says, well, the Kama, the Shari Rav Kahana, those cases is a case, Atam B'chol Mikomot Shesaviv, Ayu Urvim Yecholim Lavim Yisham, Ayu Rov Tabchei Yisrael. Everything in the vicinity was Rov Tabchei Yisrael, was Rov kosher meat, and that's why Rav Kahana said this. He's not differing from his Rebbe Rav. He believes, Basar Shenitalem Inayin, just the circumstances are different. That's how Tosafot deals with the issue, by saying they're actually different cases, but he does subscribe to Basar Shenitalem Inayin. On the other hand, we'll see from the next case that another Talmud of Rav actually paskin like Rav, and then we'll see the view of Rashi in that situation, which is Rav Chiyah Itvar Lei Karkashto. He had lost some rectums from a animal, the Beni Dano, amongst the barrels in the cellar. After the Gamed Rav Huna, he came to Rav Kuna, Amalei, Idlach Simana Begavei. Rav Huna says to him, do you have a Siman to identify it? Amalei, lo, I don't. Idlach Tfiat Eina Begavei. Do you recognize it? If you had it by sight, would you be able to recognize it? Amalei, in. He says, Imkein Zil Shkol. Then you can go and take it, and it's not a problem with Basar Shenitalem Inayin. So you see the Rav Huna did worry about Basar Shenitalem Inayin, but in order to mitigate that, he didn't require a full-fledged Siman. It just required that he had some recognition that when he saw it, he would think or know, it we'll see tomorrow, how much he needed to know, but he knew or kind of recognized that it was his piece of meat. And we have a series of stories like that. Rechanina Chozait Varlei Gava de Bisra, he lost a back or a hind of meat. After the Kameh de Rav Nachman, he came to ask Rav Nachman what to do. Amalei Idlach Simana Begavei. Do you have a Siman in it? Amalei Lo. Idlach Tviot Eino Begavei. Do you recognize it? Amalei In. Imkein Zil Shkol. So again, there, it seems like Rav Nachman believes in Basar Shenitalem Inayin, because it takes a small amount to get rid of it if you have to be a Dana. Rav Nathan Bar Abaye, Itvarlei Kibora de Techlita, he lost a spool of Techelet, out of the Kameh of Chista, Amalei Itlach Simana Begavei, do you have a Siman that this is your spool of Techelet? Amalei, lo, he says not. Itlacha Tviyo Dana Begavei, if you saw it, would you recognize it that it was your spool? Amalei, in. He says, Imkein Zmil Shkol. So over there again, there's a problem, not of Basar Shenitalem Inayin, but the same problem. Rashi claims the problem is that you mix up Techelet and Kala Ilan, indigo and Techelet were exactly the same color and very hard to discern. And if you lost your Techelet, maybe you're picking up Kala Ilan, and then you're making tzitzit with Techelet that are Kilayim, Shalom, B'Makom Mitzvah, and you have all sorts of problems if it's not real Techelet, aside from the fact that you're not doing the Mitzvah. Rabbeinu Gershom says it's a problem that you need Tviya Lishma, and that you need to make the tzitzit Lishma. And therefore, since the spool was done or done it via lishma, then it was qualified to be used for tzitzit, which wouldn't be true if it was another spool that wasn't his spool. And therefore, he needed to know that it was really his spool, and the tviyot ayin worked. Now Rashi, as opposed to the Tosafot, who said that Rav Kahana actually agreed with Rav, and therefore everybody agrees with Rav, and Halacha should be like Rav, over here Rashi says, Rav Huna, and all these cases down below, Sphere like Rav Rabbe. They hold like Rav, that Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin is a problem. Velo Kaimalon Kavatei Baha. We don't paskin like him in this instance. Ela Matnitan Samchinon. We rely on the Mishnah in Shkolim that says, Nimsa Migvulim, Matzaba Basar. If it's out in the Gvulim and you find Basar that's cut up, you're allowed to eat it. And the fact that we said back then that we solved the problem of Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin, but you were watching it the whole time and you saw him cut it up, he says, Shinuya Dechika Ninu. That's a difficult explanation of the Mishnah. It's just to save Rav's position, but it's not a real explanation of the Mishnah, and therefore the Mishnah governs in this case, and we believe the Loch is not like Rav. Don't we have a principle whenever it comes to Yisurim, Rav is the governing Psak and Halacha? That's only when he's arguing with Shmuel. That's when we say that. About Gabi Matnita, when he's arguing on a Mishnah, that's not the case. And therefore, Rav Kahana, Kachazina, Damalei Shkul Achol. And we see Rav Kahana, even Rav's own Talmud, argued on Rav, and therefore the Halacha is not like Rav in this situation with regards to Basar Nitalei Min Ayin. And if you actually look it up in Shulchan Aruch, then Siman Samach Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins across the board, like the Rambam, who says that Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin is a problem brought in Shulchan Aruch as the main or the Stam view, that Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin does apply, Paskin like Rav in all these situations. And then way at the end, he says over here, V'yesh Matirin Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin. Some people are Matir Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin, Im Nimtza B'Makom She'Nicho. If the meat is found exactly in the place where you had left it, and the Taz is even wanting to say in a case where you find it in the same place you left, even in a place that's rove, Tab Cheob De Kochavim, it still would be kasher and not a problem, Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin. Hagah, the Ramah says on that, V'minag Lahakel Kizvar Achrona. The minag is to be makil, like Rashi says over here, that we don't worry about Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin, at least in a situation where you find it in the exact same place. Afilu Imaya Biyad Nachrim. Even if it was the hand of a non-Jew, like we saw before in the Gemara, that a non-Jew's supervision is good enough for Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin, but Makom Shukola Mochrim Eim Yisraelim. As long as the majority of the meat, or all the meat sold in that area, is Jewish or kosher meat, Eim Yisraelim Amochrim Basar Kasher, then you don't have to worry about Basar Shenitalei Min Ayin. You see the Shulchan Aruch bring this as a Yesh Matirin, and the Marmah is saying that that's our minhag to be makil in these situations. At least, again, whether it's Rove the Basar in the area is kasher, and therefore even a goy would not be a problem. His supervision would be sufficient. Or in a situation when you find it in the exact same place that you left it, because then again, there's circumstantial evidence that that which you left is that which you found. So there's definitely room to be makil. But obviously, these are all in situations where there's no issue of kashrut, where there's no problem that it could have been swapped out, or there were clear simanim as to being kasher, either because you found it in the exact same place, or because it had simanim on it, or because of the fact that the robe of the meat that's sold in that area is meat that is kosher. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines from the bottom of Tzadi Hei, Amud Bet.